You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast.
Number 170, The Horizon Report interview with Audrey Waters. This is Rod Murray. Welcome back to my podcast. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's a mashup of the Beatles' Blue Jay Way. Of course, that was written by George Harrison and appeared on the Magical Mystery Tour. It was a mashup by a group called Elkin, a 1960s-influenced band from Dublin, Ireland. Hope you enjoy it. I always like that song, and you can hear it in full at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Every year I look forward to the publication of the NMC Horizon Report. Now, unfortunately, the NMC unexpectedly declared bankruptcy and ceased operations at the end of 2017. EDUCAUSE stepped in to continue the work of the Horizon Project. If you're not familiar with it, this report identifies key trends, challenges, and developments in educational technology that are likely to impact teaching and learning in the next 5 years. Since 2014, I've dedicated one of my podcasts to reviewing the Horizon Report, and I was getting ready to do that again this year. I've often wondered how accurate the report is. For example, if a number of years ago they said that the time to adoption of something like robotics was going to happen in 3 to 5 years, then when those 3 to 5 years go by, is robotics in general use? Well, I never got around to actually looking at the data, and it turns out that someone beat me to it. So in this podcast, I'm interviewing Audrey Waters. She's a self-described, quote, education writer, an independent scholar, a serial dropout, a rabble-rouser, and EdTech's Cassandra, end quote. So we discuss the Horizon Report and Audrey's history of the future of education technology. So she's done extensive analysis of the Horizon Report over the years. Now you'll find this episode to be quite different than my last reports on the Horizon Report, because I don't go into detail of the content. Suffice it to say that the Horizon Report this year stated the important developments in technology that were coming to adoption in 1 year or less are analytics technologies and makerspaces. For 2 to 3 years, they say adaptive learning technologies and artificial intelligence. In 4 to 5 years, they say mixed reality and robotics. I think robotics has been here before in some other reports. So without further ado, here's my interview with Audrey Waters. I think you'll find it interesting. So Audrey, I am so happy to talk to you. I've known about you for quite some time. And as my audience knows, I generally speaking try to do an episode at least once a year on the Horizon Report. Folks that know me know I'm a tech junkie, and especially around educational technology. And when I thought about it this year, I thought, boy, I really need to talk to the person who studies the history of the future of education technology. So before we get into the report itself, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in all this?
Well, my education story, I suppose, is fairly long and convoluted. I describe myself as a serial dropout, and I dropped out of college, dropped out of a PhD program. I didn't finish high school in the U.S. I was sent away to school in England. My mom is British. And so I've had a variety of different experiences with education and with education technology. After I dropped out of college, I ended up completing my degree at the time, what was called distance education. I lived in Wyoming. I was the mother of a baby, and I couldn't relocate to the one town in Wyoming that had a university. And so I ended up doing my degree through the community college, had some outreach programs that allowed us to participate in classes through what was at the time sort of a early distance education. It wasn't computer based. It was phone lines. We would call in, we would have conference calls and call in a number, and the various satellite schools around the state would participate. So that was one of my first experiences with, I think, what we think of as education technology is distance education in that way. And I did some correspondence courses. I remember distinctly, I took statistics via correspondence course. And I remember getting a box in the mail of like 30 video cassettes that I had to watch. And it's one of, I mean, and I think having that experience has helped me think a lot about the kinds of things that people talk about today and the predictions that they make about the ways in which technology is going to change everything. Because I had an experience that was technologically mediated. And when I hear these claims, I kind of think back often to my own experiences about what worked and what didn't work and why. For example, there are many, you could rewind a VHS tape on statistics and watch it again and again and again. This is something that Khan Academy says is so great about his YouTube videos, right? You can rewind and replay. And I promise you, if you don't understand, replaying it doesn't help.
Really, it's not intuitive. We have lecture capture here at the university using a couple of different technologies. Now we've settled on one, but I haven't done an in-depth study, but certainly students rewatch lectures, although we're trying to get away from lectures, but it's a long road here with some of our faculty to get into more active learning. But we do know that lecture capture and watching, rewatching lectures is very popular. Now, whether they do it, just before tests and whatnot is, that's probably what, where you see the most use. So why do you say that rewinding is not helpful?
Well, I mean, it's the same information again. I mean, I think certainly if you didn't catch it the first time and that explanation, you hear it again and that explanation works for you. But if you don't understand and you have questions, playing a lecture again doesn't necessarily clarify things. In a more interactive environment, you raise your hand, ask a question, and say, "Could you just try that explanation in a different way?" And I think that's the difference. Certainly, I mean, this is one of the things that I think is important to recognize about technologies like lecture capture. And again, my experiences as someone who had a baby when I was trying to finish my college degree, I needed to be able to have school fit my schedule, and distance education made that possible. Being able to watch videos of statistics classes wasn't necessarily ideal, but it was better than not being able to, I couldn't have taken the class otherwise.
Right. No, I certainly understand that. And certainly we have to be aware these days of how we structure our online courses, just for the fact that we need to abide by the Department of Education regulations, and students can't get, federal student loans for correspondence courses. They must have, quote, substantial interaction with faculty, which I take it you don't get if you're just watching videotape.
Right.
So, things have, technology has moved on, and I'm a technology nerd, and I love to think about the future of education, future of educational technology, and I'm always thinking about, what to adopt. And certainly, you have to think about the pedagogy, and you don't adopt it for the sake of adopting a new technology. It has to have some purpose. And so I looked forward to reading the annual Horizon reports, but I gather that you have a different take on the Horizon report. And in fact, I think I read at some point you said in your extensive writing, which is wonderful. I think I can quote you. I quote you right when at one point you said, "I had hoped that the whole thing would go away," referring to the Horizon report. What can you tell me about your take on the Horizon report?
So I'm fascinated by what I describe as the history of the future. I'm really interested in the ways in which we like to make these really sweeping predictions and pronouncements about, in particular, about what technology is going to do, right? Edison, I think, famously predicted in the 19-teens that textbooks were on the cusp of being, you know, eliminated, and that the film would replace the textbook within a year or two. Of course, Edison was sort of invested, very invested, literally invested in that becoming the future. And so to me, it's really interesting to think about these predictions, why they come to pass, why they don't come to pass, but really why they're made. What are people thinking about when they see these things, to borrow the phrase, on the horizon? And I think it's not like weather forecasting, right? Or oftentimes it's not. It's not modeling. It's not something done based on, we have a bunch of data that knows, I live in Los Angeles, and so we have a lot of data that says it's going to be sunny and hot today. And so I think that, you know, these kinds of predictions aren't based on science or mathematical models. And I think that that should give us pause when people make these sweeping predictions. And I don't think that, you know, the Horizon Report is certainly not the only one to do so. Gartner, for example, Forrester, these companies, there are many consulting companies who do a lot of, who are really in the business of making these sorts of predictions. You hear these sort of things all the time, that in the next, you know, in the next 5 years, Internet of Things is going to be a multi-billion dollar company. And then I think that their response, you know, these press releases are issued and they're often not true. They're often inaccurate. But to me, it's what's interesting is to think about how are these used also as sort of rhetorical devices, right? So how do people cite Gartner or cite the Horizon Report in order to make their own arguments about what technology you should buy or what technology you should adopt? And to me, that's really where the interesting piece is. But mostly I think that they're bunk. I mean, frankly, I think that they're bunk. And the Horizon Report is, I just don't think it's accurate enough for anyone to really say that it has, I'm not sure what its utility is, I'll say that, other than being able to be used in a pitch to your boss and to the administration in the case of a university, what we should be doing. But I'm not sure that it's accurate information. It just helps make the pitch, right? It's on the Horizon Report. Looks like everyone's doing it. We better build a makerspace.
Exactly. No, I see where you're coming from. I really do. I mean, look at, you know, the predictions about AI. They've been going on for decades, you know.
Yes. I mean, I think that that's, I mean, and that's what's so interesting to me about, there's something about, I think, the computing technology in particular that really coincides with this. Like the, you know, I mean, Alan Kay's famous phrase, the best way to predict the future is to build it. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are in the business, not so much of building the future, but of issuing press releases about the future, hoping that that's what things are going to look like. And sometimes I think that those narratives are powerful enough that they do reshape things. I mean, I think about all of the predictions that were made about MOOCs. What was that, 6 years ago? Sebastian Thrun, the founder of Udacity, famously predicted that in 50 years' time, there would only be 10 universities left in the world, and Udacity would be one of them. MOOCs haven't gone away, and I think that in some ways, you know, a lot of people did jump in response to these kinds of predictions. And so I think it, to me, like that's what's interesting to think about. Not so much to sort of shame the Horizon Report folks for getting it wrong. I don't think that that's the point, but I think that they do get it really wrong.
You know, it's funny when before I discovered you and your interest in this, a couple of years ago, I was thinking, along the same lines, you know, I see these Horizon reports come out, and you know, I've always wanted to take the time to look at them and start charting the different technologies and you know, if what they said 3 years ago was going to be in common use today, did that really come true or not? And of course, I never got around to it, but I found that's exactly what you did. You know? So I think that's great. I'm certainly going to link to some of your sites in my show notes, because I think it's very illustrative of what you're talking about.
And I think it's interesting, you know, one of the things that I wish that these reports would do is talk about, I mean, I know that there is sort of a vast background wiki where a lot of the Horizon Report work is done, right? The people who participate in the methodology to put together the Horizon Report, I know that they talk these things through, and I know that those materials are out there, but it's not always particularly clear. And I'm often curious sort of what happened to things, right? Like what happened to, you know, I'll pick one that was on the 2016 Horizon report said that we were 2 to 3 years away from virtual reality. But virtual reality wasn't on last year's Horizon report, and it wasn't on this year's Horizon report. So like what happened?
Right.
Did it gain adoption? In some of these cases, I think these things did get adoption, and then they don't get, you know, they're sort of, we don't really talk about it anymore.
Maybe they're in the valley of disillusionment or whatever that the Gartner talks about.
But then what I think is also really interesting when you look at the mapping that I've done is that mobile devices have been on the horizon, like, almost every year since the report began. And remember, the time frame for the report is just within 4 to 5 years. And so we're looking at almost 15 years of saying mobile computing is just around the corner, next corner, promise you.
For years when I've been in the business for a while. So for years when I would give talks to faculty about the future of educational technology, I would always, you know, give a little, I haven't done it lately, but I used to have a number of slides I would put up and talking about how, you know, the entertainment technologies usually precede, you know, the use in the schoolhouse and education, you know, film strips and televisions and CD-ROMs. And then they eventually become, adapted or adopted by educational institutions. And that's a trend that seems to work. Now, you know, VR, I've heard a lot of people say, well, gosh, you know, I tried this VR headset and I get nauseous and I put it down after about 10 minutes. So maybe that's never going to make it into the, I know a lot of companies are putting a lot of money into developing that as a entertainment tool. So maybe it's never going to arrive, as a good education tool. Maybe that's why it dropped off. But there are certainly other, just ubiquitous wireless has certainly made a big impact, and that's that's ushering in this mobile education.
Yeah, I think that interestingly, so I'm also really fascinated by something like VR, which a lot like AI, people have been predicting for decades now that VR was just around the corner. And so some of these things we can say, well, maybe the technology isn't there yet. Some of these things we can say, maybe, you know, or maybe the cost is still far too high for us to adopt this, particularly in a world where we're quite accustomed to now to everyone having their own device, right? Mm-hmm. So VR doesn't necessarily make sense unless you can have a classroom full of it, because no one wants to watch someone else with the headset on.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Not fun. But, you know, so thinking about what other things stand in the way, what other, is it that there's not good educational content? And what do people imagine the educational content looking like? Walmart, interestingly, says it's going to train all of its new employees using VR. And I don't know any details. I don't know that I'm laughing. I shouldn't be laughing. I don't know that I have, I can just imagine, but I don't know the details of what that looks like. I don't know what that means in terms of, is this safety training? Is this how to stock a shelf training? Is this how to bend from the knees and not the waist training and lift? You know, I don't know. But so, you know, thinking about the places in which some of this stuff does get adopted is also really interesting to me. And the Horizon report, again, it, you know, they do, they have the different reports for K-12 and a different one for higher ed and one for librarians, libraries and museums as well. But it's always interesting to me as well that there's not a corporate education, because I think corporate learning is huge. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that the insights of people who work in instructional technology, you know, in schools are necessarily, I don't know, like, I just don't know what people who are in corporate education are thinking.
You know, that's, I know what you're saying. And that is a good opportunity for me to give a plug to an organization here in our region, which is a chapter of the U.S. Distance Learning Association, PADLA, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey Distance Learning Association. But the thing I like about this group is that their meetings bring together corporate folks and higher ed folks. So we get to sort of learn from each other. And it's true. There's not much, cross talk or cross utilization between these two major segments.
Yeah. I'm really curious, you know, I'm curious what the future of this looks like too, thinking about, Amazon, announced, well, I don't know if they announced or if news was leaked earlier this year, I believe, that Candace Thiel, who used to work at Carnegie Mellon on a lot of online education and then was at Stanford briefly, she's now at Amazon. And so, again, thinking about what's happening and what are corporations going to be doing? I know that corporations really like to offload job training to schools. But what are corporations going to be doing to train and retrain and maintain, you know, maintain the professional development of their employees? What technologies are going to be used there? It's always interesting to have an opportunity. I think that sometimes professors and staff get to do this, but when you find yourself learning on the tools that are often assigned to students, right? When you find yourself a student and having to sort of navigate a learning management system, or finding yourself having to go through the HR training with some interactive online portal, you're like, wow, this is not good.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's usually a lot of text and a page turner, you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that the way things are evolving. I mean, look at, you mentioned already, Amazon, Google's really seems to be getting into the education space with their Google Classroom. And, you know, Apple has some sort of experimenting around the edges, you know, with their iBooks and things like that. But it's certainly heading towards, you know, a corporate, consolidation, I guess. And with some of the big four, you know, Facebook, you know, Amazon, Google and Apple.
It's interesting to think about what a company like Salesforce, for example, which is, I think, also dabbling in creating a learning management system, a company that's much more integrated in the business world, what it's going to pull together in terms of its, you know, its education and job training portfolio. Of course, we saw LinkedIn acquire Lynda.com and Microsoft acquire LinkedIn. And I don't think that is an education play in the traditional K-12 higher ed sense. I think that's a corporate training play.
Exactly. Yeah. Although another company you're hearing more and more about these days is Workday. In fact, we're in the process of moving on to Workday for our ERP and replacing all of our financial and HR systems. But eventually, the next phase is replacing our SIS. So it's interesting that, they're, you know, in fact, the Workday Rising, their annual meeting is this week, and I watched one of their keynotes, and they're talking about having tools in there where you can build your own, you know, point-and-click applications within Workday. So, you know, it's not far-fetched to think that these companies, if they're really digging into the higher ed market, they're going to be pulling business away from, who knows, you know, Blackboard and Canvas and everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's one of the reasons why I find the history of education and education technology so interesting, but also really important, is to think about why did we end up with the learning management system, right? The learning management system is a particular administrative tool that was, and technological tool, that was born of a particular moment. And part of that was because the student information system did not have any kind of web or internet portal, right? And so we had to sort of build this other front end with the, you know, that you would download the cartridges of of data and then upload them into download from the student information system and then upload it into the learning management system, because there weren't things like web-based APIs or technology, and the user interface for these tools, these old student information systems, was
horrible.
Terrible.
Yes.
Terrible. And they're still terrible.
Yes, they are.
And then we built this other terrible layer on top of it, the portal, which is so much to me an example of that sort of late 90s idea of AOL or Yahoo, that we don't want people to actually, we want people to do things online, but we don't really want them on the web. Every time I use Blackboard, I'm just reminded that it is a relic of AOL. It's like, are you sure you want to leave AOL and go on the web? The learning management system to me seems to really represent that particular moment in technology. So yeah, I think it will be really interesting if tech companies that are more in the business of the sort of customer relationship, personnel management, decide that they want to make a play for the student information system. And like you said, for also the things that we've built on top of that.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, listen, I want to be respectful of your time, but there's one thing I want to make sure I give you time to mention. I know, you know, we've already talked about your project and analyzing, you know, the history of the future of education, but I also, to be honest, I don't think I've read it yet, but, you also write a top ed tech trends. Can you tell us about that and the kinds of things you cover?
I'm really interested, as I've the things I've said so far have indicated, I'm so interested in the stories that we hear about education. And so I'm fascinated by the things that you sort of kind of, if you pay attention closely to ed tech, you sort of see the sort of groundswell of buzz around particular topics. And not that those are necessarily being widely adopted, right? But those are things that people seem to be talking about and promoting and interested in. And so I try to pay attention every year. At the end of the year, I look through all of the news that's happened from the previous 12 months. And I try to identify, when I say trends, I don't mean like these are the technologies that are being adopted. I mean that these are the stories that, these are the loudest stories that I've heard. And sometimes those do map directly to adoption. But sometimes it's just a lot of noise from the tech sector that I think is, again, sort of marketing certain ideas that don't necessarily go anywhere, or sort of just really talking up certain things, hoping that that's going to be the future,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's their marketing. They want to build out a new niche, a new market for something they have up their sleeve. Well, I can tell you that I'm going to be adding that to my reading list. So I'm glad to learn about that. Is there anything else you want to mention about the future of higher ed that we may not have hit on?
Well, you know, I'm the moment I'm working on a book, which is also about the history of education technology. And I think that when I think about the future of technology, the future of education, I think that there are a lot of forces at play that aren't simply technological. They're deeply political. They're profoundly cultural. And so I think that sometimes if I had to sort of give a cautionary note, I think sometimes we pay too close attention to the gadgets and not enough attention to the sort of systems and institutions and practices that sort of surround a particular piece of technology. And I think that the politics of education and the finances of education, like the economics of education, are pretty important to pay attention to. And so I think that that's, you know, what I think about right now in terms of the future of education. It's, you know, there's a reason why I think we should start thinking about the corporate education piece. And that's because that's a really powerful story right now that somehow universities aren't preparing students for jobs. And so listening to those kinds of narratives, I think paying attention to those kinds of narratives, not so that universities somehow start to do the bidding of the corporate world any more than they already do, but just to pay attention to sort of what are the things that people are saying about the responsibility of higher ed.
Yeah, it's certainly an important area, especially with our new political environment. I think it's going to be really important. And, you know, I think hopefully some of these companies have learned their lessons about you just can't throw technology out of school. Wasn't it Facebook that dumped, millions of dollars of computer hardware onto where was that, in Newark, New Jersey or someplace? And, of course, it just totally bombed because the faculty, you know, didn't know how to use it. And we've seen that story happening time and time again.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the, unfortunately, if I were to sort of say that that's what's on the horizon, you know, those are the kinds of things that we should be thinking about. The technology is not a solution. You know, I think that we have there are other pieces at play. People solve problems, not tools.
Well, on that note, I think I'm going to let you go. I could go on and on. So I'm going to have you back again. So we'll have to do this again. And
anytime.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be following you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for this month's podcast. I did want to point out that the links I have on my show notes might be very interesting to you. There's a link to the full 2018 NMC Horizon Report. There's also some links to articles about the Horizon Report on Inside Higher Ed, and also Audrey's own websites. She has some very interesting reading. I have a link to a Horizon Report history, an article, a blog entry on The Horizon Never Moves, and a full data dump, the historical data from the Horizon Report for higher education. So don't forget to go to my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. So stay tuned for the full song called Don't Be Long, The Beatles v. Elkin. And until next time, have a great week.
See where things have gone in light of progress. We're light years ahead of what is success. make sure that it grows the aim you set. Someday soon you know you get what's coming. Just reward for action only coming. Take hold of yourself, it needs a shaking. Please don't be lonely, please don't you be very long,
don't be long.
Please don't be long, for I may be asleep. To home, I've known you always. It's absurd to think we miss the making. Fool yourself, I know we've stopped dreaming.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.